is time for the podcast. So I'm going to start off right away here because I got a cool thing. I got a cool message the other day that I didn't tell you about.
Oh, good. Tell me.
So some guy.
Yeah.
His name is Paul. I'm going to use his name because I feel like he won't mind.
Okay.
He's from Edmonton.
Okay.
Which is cool.
Yeah.
So he sent me this message. He said, "Love the podcast, guys. I thought you might find this interesting. Sends me an article." The article says, this is the title of the article. "Not protective. Early body checking doesn't prevent hockey injuries, study finds."
Does not prevent.
Doesn't.
I'm just trying to dumb it down.
Yeah, so starting body checking at a younger age
is fine.
Doesn't help prevent injuries.
Right.
So if you start earlier, that doesn't mean later you'll be better equipped to handle the hitting.
Yeah. Got it.
Is kind of the implication. So I went to the study.
Yeah. Oh, good. I was going to ask you, like, where's the study?
So
how's the study?
So here's the message for people. And just to be clear, Paul wasn't saying that, because we touched on it last episode or a couple episodes ago, where we were kind of saying we think it's better if kids learn to hit earlier.
Yeah.
And we didn't say, because I went back and listened to it after because I wasn't sure what we said, but we weren't saying that you for sure are going to be able to prevent injuries by learning to check sooner. But the kind of idea we were saying is you learn how to play the game more properly. Mm-hmm. More properly? Does that make sense?
I don't think I would say. I got some grammar stuff we're going to talk about. So we'll, is more it more properly?
It doesn't sound right.
Say the sentence again.
You will learn to play the game more properly.
More gooder.
More better. Yeah. Anyways.
No, so, I think it's just properly.
Yeah, you're learning to play properly by having hitting earlier. That was more the point we were making. Paul wasn't disputing that. He was just sending an article because he thought it was interesting, which I appreciated.
Yeah,
so we had a little quick back and forth. Anyways, went to the study. So here's a little tidbit for people that anytime anyone is saying, "Well, I read this, I read that," it's important to know the source, and it's important to question everything, in my opinion. You don't take things, it doesn't matter where it's coming from, you don't just take things for granted. So sends me the article. I didn't even read the article. I went right to the study right away. And that's a good thing. It's a good practice for people to do. If somebody sends you an article on something, go check the study of what it could be about any topic. And most of the time, if it's a decent source, it'll give you some things you can understand. Like when you get into the statistics of things, sometimes that can get complicated. But if you read the background, how they did the study and the conclusions of the study, you can get a lot more than reading the article that talks about what the study said. If that makes sense.
100%.
So there's a little side tangent on evaluating evidence. But anyways, so he sent me it, and there's some things about the study that
flip a coin.
Yeah, it's a hard thing to measure. Like, how are you measuring this, right? So anyways, they looked at 941 players. So they compared players with 2 years or less of body checking to those with 3 years or more. And they found that the 3 years or more group, so the kids that had more body checking actually had more injuries. So it's counterintuitive, but it kind of makes sense because the more contact, the more injuries.
Of course.
Right? It's not that if you have less contact, you will have less injuries the longer you sustain.
From contact.
Right. So anyways, I just thought it was an interesting thing. And my point of that was just to point out that in that piece, we weren't really saying it's going to prevent injuries because you can't. It's too fast. People are too strong. If there's contact, there's going to be injuries, man. That's what's going to happen. But it was more preparing yourself to play when you know that there's going to be contact.
Yeah.
Not necessarily from the injury prevention standpoint.
Yeah.
But more so from the playing the game properly standpoint. So I thought that was really cool anyways that this guy sent this to us. And if anyone has anything, because a lot of people are listening to this now, so if anyone has things like this that you want to send in, like I'm pretty responsive on email stuff. If you send stuff in, I'll definitely see it and look at it. So I thought it was pretty cool. Anyways.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like I always say that with studies too, is you don't know who's being studied, right?
Yeah.
So sometimes you do have to check it out. Like, for example, I think I've used this before, is that when people do bodybuilding or weightlifting or strength studies, a lot of the times the studies they do at universities are the actual people that are doing the input on computers and they're not actually athletes. So you'll see, on a 6-week hypertrophy program versus a strength program, this half did this and this half did this.
Right.
But the bottom line is that they weren't really athletes. So they're going to get results, you know, so you can kind of skew those studies. This is supposed to be a study. So this is like maybe off a little bit, but I was having a discussion with someone This is probably about 5 years ago. And we were talking about concussions. And this person was in the U.S., I believe. Anyways, we're having a face-to-face discussion, and there's studies done on how concussions happen. I could be totally wrong, but this is just a discussion we had.
Yep.
And it actually made sense to me. They did, like, if you were to ask, well, I'm going to ask you, who do you think gets which sport would be susceptible to concussions?
Well,
like most susceptible, just off the top of your head, what would you think?
You would think it would be the high contact sports. I think I already know the answer to the question. Right. That's why I'm saying it like that. You would think it would be football, hockey,
right,
where there's a lot of bumping around.
Yeah. Okay. So the study, I cut you off there, but study was, as they did all the sports, they found that the susceptible to concussions would be wrestlers.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, 'cause they just get slammed on the head a lot.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks in football.
Yeah.
And of course, they're looking at the boxing and stuff. But the thing was, the wrestlers had a very low incident rate of concussions. Yeah. The reason was is because they actually train neck training to control their neck, and it's not snapping around. Whereas the football players, like the quarterbacks, they get smacked around a lot, but it's blindside hits. Right. So when you're not ready for it, and boxers, right? They're boxing, and they have their, they do neck training, so it's not snapping. Your head's not snapping around. So a lot of the times when you're playing hockey, that's where you see the concussions coming, is from blindside hits or when unsuspecting hits.
Yeah.
That's when your head snaps back, and that, I'm not a doctor. Right, you know what I mean? But it makes sense to me.
Right.
Quarterbacks, they're going for a ball and someone hits them from behind or from the side that they didn't see, and you see their head snap. That's where a lot of concussions are. And of course, there's the direct contact too, but that was something.
Yeah, so, yeah, for sure. Well, yeah, it's interesting, something. But that's a good, it's just a good general point for people is when somebody says, especially now, because there's so many conflicting pieces of information about everything, so it's really difficult to evaluate what's actually true and whatever. And a lot of times I find it's very context dependent what you're looking at, you know, so you can find specific information about a specific thing and you can find something that's kind of close to that but doesn't really apply to that says the opposite, so you have to really be selective about what kind of evidence you're taking in as fact or as truth or whatever, however you want to say it. But it's important that you go and actually read from the source what the information actually says, because that'll give you the best gauge on what they're actually talking about. So I thought that was just kind of a interesting little tidbit of info.
What else was I going to say about that? Oh, on our Sunday league with our junior pro guys, the first week. So obviously when we're playing in our Sunday league in June, July, and August, it's for them to keep a good hockey pace. But and I would rather them not hammer each other, open ice hits and stuff like that. But after the first day, I said to the guys, I said, I actually want you to have some contact because it's just better for hockey. Because what happens is you get guys wheeling around and then they become careless almost. And then when contact comes, it's like, you got to get back into it. So, I encourage the guys to like don't blow someone up at center ice and don't put someone through the boards, but finish checks, because it becomes more real and the actual game changes just a little bit, just enough. It makes it better. And it's better for, the last piece of that is, so when it's just, if there's no contact whatsoever, then the game becomes a little bit more floaty and you get the skill guys trying to be skill guys. Whereas, you get a guy that's more of a grinder or a shutdown D, they don't get to play their game quite as much. So I like having a little bit of contact and everybody's fine with it, but it makes the game better.
And that's my exact point about what we were saying with the younger kids, is the sooner you have them do that, the sooner they're starting to feel what real hockey's like. So it's not necessarily the injury part. It's more the, somebody is there in your way. It's like, it can be a little bit surprising or startling or whatever word you want to use, that when someone's right there to bump into you. And that's what we're starting to encourage more on that Sunday league as well. Just like that little bit of touch, people start to, it starts to get back into what real hockey's like, So otherwise exactly that happens, what you're saying. You get the guy that comes and wheels right down the shoot in the offensive zone, which that would never happen in a game ever, right? So it's like, and that's because guys can't hit. So guys will go stick check, and this guy can toe drag him now, because in the real game, he would have actually lit him up down the middle, and that guy would have never taken that lane or whatever, right? So
it's good. I think it's good.
That's right.
So Charlie's agent called me beginning of last week, and Ian, really good guy, man. I like it because I like him because, well, I like him for a lot of reasons, but I like him because it's not all about, well, it is about being a good hockey player, but it's about, he'll measure things like, are you reading? Are you working on your brain? He does things on the...
Like development-wise?
Yeah, but just as a person and the individual and the human.
Yeah.
But what he likes to, like what he does is it's one thing that he's good at, and it's one thing that is actually important that a lot of people don't speak to, right? It's like if you talk to someone, it's like, how's your training?
Right.
How's your, are you working your edges and all these different things? But the you know, a lot of the meat of the things is just getting your mind right, eating right, just the different things. And Ian's very good at that. And anyways, so that's that. So he said, hey, you and Charlie, if you get a chance, watch Man in the Arena. It's from with Tom Brady in it. It's a documentary. Mm-hmm. So I said, absolutely, right away. I'll tell Charlie we'll watch it tonight. So he says, make sure you watch up to episode 2. So they're about 45 minutes long. And I said, yeah, for sure. Because I love that stuff, documentary. If I'm going to watch TV, I want to watch like a sports game or something that I can learn from. And documentaries are great. I love watching like NFL stories and, you know, documentaries where you see the good, the bad, and the ugly, where people come from, because it's important, man. It's important. So a lot of times kids don't get a chance to read books, and they have an advantage right now because reading sometimes is difficult. It's not fun, and it's an acquired taste, almost like, you know, beer and wine and rye and all that kind of stuff, right? So documentaries can fill that void. So anyways, I said, for sure. So I said, me and Charlie sat down. And I said, as I turned it on, I said, hey, Charlie, do you understand the story of Tom Brady? He goes, yeah. I said, like, you know that he wasn't a star. He goes, yeah, I know. So I said, okay, I wanted to be clear because the part I like about this is, as we say, when people are going through the ranks of hockey or sports or whatever, everyone's in such a rush. And if we're not a superstar early, then we almost kind of give up. And this is the one of the best stories you can come up with. I mean, the guy's a superstar, right? So let me just say this. It's a documentary about Tom Brady and about the, so far as from what I know, the New England Patriots on why they're such a good team from the coaches and the players down. And it talks about the culture and they have different players on the team speaking about different things. And a lot of the times about just Tom Brady himself. So very, very interesting perspectives. So just to be real clear, Tom Brady is in his 21st year as a starting quarterback in the NFL. He's got 7 Super Bowl wins. He's been, I think, 9 Super Bowls. I'm going to be off on a couple of these things. Holds the most NFL quarterback records ever. Skip that one. So when you think about those records, and he's 44 years old right now. Okay, so he's been playing for 20 years, 44 years old, and he still calls the shots. So you got to say that's pretty impressive. Now, if you go back, he was a 6th-round pick. Okay, so in the NFL, 6th-round pick as a quarterback, not a lot of hope.
No.
Okay? Redshirted his first year at Michigan, so he got a scholarship to Michigan. He was redshirted, which means you were on the practice squad. He was 7th in the depth chart. He was a backup quarterback to Brian Griese for the first 2 years, and then he was like 7th in the depth chart. Battled to get some playing time when Drew Henson was in front of him. Hired a psychologist to help him with frustration and anxiety to going through in college.
Yeah.
Like, so he's sitting there going, why can't I play? I just want a chance. Like, this is brutal. I'm going to practice every day. And you got to think, because Dalton talked about this, right? And I've actually talked to quite a few pros in the NHL that do this. When you're not top-notch guy, if you're getting scratched and stuff, guess what you get to do that day? Bag skate. Yeah. Every day. It gets old and frustrating, and then you wonder why you're even in the NHL. In fact, Dalton sent me, we were talking, his 1 year in Calgary, he was getting scratched a little bit. And he goes, I don't even feel like I should be in the NHL. So I had a good talk with him, and he's like, oh, yeah, I'm back. But that's what happens, right? The anxiety and the frustration. So, and then he battled for that. So in pro, at the combine, he goes to this combine, and he was, like, super underwhelming. So if you ever watch a video of him, and they showed the combine.
I remember. Yeah,
he's standing there, like, to get his arm span standing there, and he looks like at the time, he would have been in his early 20s. He looked like an out-of-shape dad.
Oh, he's an absolute milk bag.
Just a milk bag.
Complete milk bag.
He was slow, had his dad bod, and I guess he didn't have the best arm. So they show him running the 40 meter sprint, and it's like it looked like a guy out of shape going for a jog, and he was sprinting.
Yeah.
How the heck does this guy make it? For in the first place, how does he even get to that place? But I guess he had a brain, right?
Yeah.
So what I love is that I love that he just wasn't the best. This is what I love about this story about Tom Brady. He wasn't the best. Mm-hmm. So when we're sitting here as players and parents, this is good for parents and players, because once you get to certain levels, let's say college, OHL, or your first couple of years in higher levels, junior B, whatever, we all expect things to happen quickly, and we can't even fathom sometimes how hard it is to be, you know, when you're playing against guys 4, 5, 10 years older in the NHL and stuff, 20 years older, can't even fathom how hard that is to get good in that league, and that we can't fathom that your time is coming, you have to develop, and maybe you got 10 points your first year and limited ice time, and you're so frustrated, you can't put together like this, I don't know if this is ever going to work. And if you look at if you go and see stats of players, you know, like Eric Wellwood, for example, who worked with me in Coaches Pro, he got drafted to the Spitfires, and then he got, you know, sent down to junior B, and then he got called up the next year and he played, you know, on the fourth line and got like 10 points. And then the next year he had like 17 points. And then the next year he had maybe 30. And then the following year he had like 70 points and 34 goals.
Yep.
It's a process.
That's right.
And it's grinding through the process. I mean, grinding through and understand that the process actually works if you do the work.
Yeah.
But it's so frustrating. But I really like the fact that this documentary is not about Tom Brady was a superstar kid. Like almost like Wayne Gretzky, right? There's adversity and all
Crosby,
that stuff. But
yeah,
he was a superstar kid, went to any school that he wanted to, was a starter, had a success story, and the end. Yeah. Right. I really love that thing. So do you have anything to add to that?
Right, yeah. So this goes back to one of the episodes we did a while ago about, it was called There Is No Recipe, mm-hmm. how you can find a guy that took every which way to get where he's going. So the context we were talking about before is people think that there's decisions you're going to make when you're young that are so consequential that will either make you or break you when you're 10, 11, 12, 13, yeah. whatever. And we talked a little bit about
right.
how you can find a guy that did it the superstar way, where they were just the best and always the best, the guy that was a star but then fell off the map and didn't make it, the guy that was kind of a star and then fell off and then came back, the guy that nobody ever heard of and he comes out of nowhere and is the best, or the guy that you've never heard of and he comes up and he's just good. He's not the best, but he's just good, and he makes it and he's there. One guy that I remember I used to watch, he was in the OHL when I was a kid, was Josh Bailey.
Yeah.
Josh Bailey.
Yeah.
And so he was a top end
yeah.
junior player.
Yes, he was.
And he's a guy that could have gone on to be, by all accounts, he was a second round pick?
He was a first round pick.
So it's like this guy could be a star for sure. Yeah. And he's not a star in the NHL.
He's just really
good.
He's really good.
You know, yes. he's there. He's been playing for 12, 13 years
right.
now.
Really good.
I think he's a second line center, and he's been there on the Islanders since he got drafted or whatever, right? And stories like this.
I think he made it at 19 or 20. I think 20
years
old.
Yeah, he was there quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. So my point in saying that in relation to what you're talking about here is Tom Brady's the extreme of he was, not that he was no good, he was just good, but not that good. And then all of a sudden he turns into this superstar.
Seventh on the depth chart at Michigan.
Yeah, right? But I mean, you still got a scholarship to Michigan.
100%.
So you're good.
100%.
But you weren't a stud, you know? And this is just another example of that. There's no recipe thing. Like, you can find the guy that did it every which way, and people are inclined to pay attention to the highlights, meaning the best guy, the highlight reel, goals. People are inclined to pay attention to that on their Instagram. People post the highlights of their life. Nobody sees the stuff that builds up to it.
Yeah,
you know, and it's easy to forget and think that you need to be at this level at this age and follow on the Sidney Crosby track and all that kind of stuff. And for every guy that's that superstar, you can find another guy that's equally there, has been there just as long, makes close to the same amount of money, and they did a completely different way. They came from wherever they came from, their own way, you know. So these are the kinds of stories that are super inspiring for people to watch, because you can, you know that you have a chance. You always have a chance, man. There's always a chance that you can make it through, stick to the process, like you're saying, and end up getting to where you want to go. And it's just a way, I think it's a way better story because most people are going to be like that. Not that they'll get to the superstar level he got to, but most people are going to have to muck and grind and battle and whatever. Very few guys get that straight shot from the time they're 10, 11, 12, right up to being the superstar, you know? So it's a really, really good message. So it's nice that you guys found that, or that Ian showed you guys that.
Well, it was not that it was good timing or bad timing, but it was timing, I guess. Just talk about your days coming. So we were watching the Memorial Cup finals, the Ontario Hockey League finals. And we're just saying about, I said, look at these guys never come off the ice, eh, Charlie? And then guys that were playing a little bit more earlier in the season weren't getting on the ice because now it's like go time. So now you're fighting for your ice time. You can continue doing what you're doing. In 3-4 years or 2-3 years, the roles change because you're the older guy. And if you look on the ice, everyone's 19 or 20. You're the 16, 17-year-olds aren't the stars right now. It's just the way it is.
Yep.
So you have to go through that process. And we're so anxious to prove that we're good now, but you just have to do the little things now. Be good at both ends of the ice. Be good at your checking. Be good at being responsible, you know, chipping in when you can. And then you don't have to be a star, like you said, at 14 or 15 or 12 or 17 or 20. It's grinding it out. And you don't have to be a first-round pick or a second-round pick. It's grinding it out. You know, as you were speaking about going through maybe not being a star, remember what I was saying about, and you read that too, about George St. Pierre when he was beginning to become a mixed martial artist. He was taking his little bit of money and taking a bus or getting a ride to New York City and going to this cockroach-infested little room with drunks and druggies to go to train with John Danaher, the jiu-jitsu coach. And he'd spend all day there and he'd just say, hey, this is what I have. What can I do? And he'd just say, yeah, just stay all day. And he'd stay all weekend and train. And that coach said, there's not one thing in that kid, George St. Pierre at the time, that indicated that he would be a world champion. Not one thing. But he did whatever it took. So that was kind of cool. So when you're discouraged, if you're ever discouraged, just look at Tom Brady. Just look at Tom Brady. Like this is the best quarterback probably of all time that wasn't good until, like, really good until he was his last year of college.
Yep.
So if you want it, if you have the work ethic, if you have the desire, stick to it. And I'm not saying you're going to be the superstar, but it sometimes just takes time. If someone that good had to go through years of frustration and hiring a psychologist, then wow.
Yeah, right? And just be patient, man. Like, this is the age of everything now. I want it now. I want it today.
Yeah.
I want it yesterday. Like, that's the framing for a lot of, and not just kids either, like parents and adults too. Like, this is the other part of the discussion that gets irritating to me when people try to pin, you know, they make this generation, this and that and whatever. I've said this a million times before, but like, you're the parents of the generation.
Yep.
And you guys do the same shit. It's like when I watch kids on the treadmill and mom or dad is sitting right there and they are on their phone the whole time.
You know,
they want their nice car now. They want to pay for things they can't afford now. So it's not just the kids, but it's important that you're patient, man. It takes time. If you're not the kid that's getting the straight shot, which is basically nobody, you have to be patient. You don't want to be your own worst enemy.
Yeah,
and
for
that's,
sure.
We have some kids that you can see some of that in here too, because kids are different. Some kids handle things better than others, but there's a few kids that, really smart kids, they have some potential to go on and play and potentially make a career out of playing. And you can see that the way they think about things sometimes, it's like you might be the thing that gets in your own way.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you don't want to be, just because you weren't patient enough, you know, because you couldn't stay even keeled enough through the hard stretches that you're going to get, you know. So you got to be patient.
Jealous
of
someone else's early glory.
Yeah.
That's another thing.
That's a tough one to deal with, man. I remember that. I remember that when I was playing, when I was a kid, you see the guy that got drafted, or the guy that's getting all the opportunity, the guy that everyone likes, he gets to play every power play, all that kind of stuff. It's like, it's really easy to get. I'm not sitting here saying it's something that's easy to avoid. It's hard to avoid. It's difficult. But
so just recently, they did some selections for under 17, under 18 world junior camps. And I go back to Jocko Willing's good So if you didn't get selected to go to the, I mean, we're still young, right? But if you didn't get selected to go to the under 17 or under 18 camp, if that's a goal of yours, it could be like, man, I wanted that. And you can sit there and look at, I think I'm good enough and all that kind of stuff. That's fine. But to me, the answer is good, because this was a long season anyways, like it ended longer. So the kids that are 16, 17, 18 years old that finish their season in June, May, end of May, early June, or even now, they've got the Memorial Cup. They got to go from that, from a hard playoff, to go to another camp. Where is the training? So I would be almost think you might be in a better, set yourself in a better position to do rehab, get back into shape, and to get your strength and all that stuff, rather than going to a camp and going for another beatdown and not taking a break. Well, you know what I mean? That's the good, yeah.
And you've said that before. It's do you want to be do you want to play on Team Canada under 17, or do you want to play at the World Juniors, or do you want to play in the NHL?
Right.
Like, which thing do you want? And if you miss one of those other two, like, what a nice, like, feather in the cap type moment. You get to go play for Team Canada.
It's awesome.
That's amazing.
It's awesome.
I'm not sitting here saying you shouldn't do that if you get the opportunity. But is it the end of the world in the grand scheme of things? It's like you have a greater goal, and that might actually be good. You get that time to heal. And you know, we were watching the, I think it was game one, Hamilton and St. John's. That's who's playing Memorial Cup right now.
Dogs,
yeah, first game. And St. John won 5-3, I believe.
Yep, I think so. 5-3, yeah.
St. John's, they didn't have a great team. So one of the guys that works with us was saying that the coach from UNB is coaching St. John's right now.
Yeah.
Because St. John's fired their coach because they lost first round, or they didn't make the playoffs, or I don't know what happened with them this year. I'm not sure, but they are hosting, so they get to be in. So here's a team that they didn't get to play all of playoffs, fire the coach, got a new coach coming in, and then game one of Memorial Cup, they just beat Hamilton, who I don't know if they're favored to win or what, but they're the top team, one of the top teams in Canada.
Yeah, they've got some good odds.
Yeah, right? And St. John's comes in and wins their first game. And tell me that's not because Hamilton's just played a 7-game series against Windsor and played 2 months of playoff hockey, and St. John's has been probably preparing just for the Memorial Cup.
Yeah.
Their guys get to train, they get to practice, they get the time off, they get the rest.
Yeah.
You know, so don't underestimate.
Hamilton's a mass unit right now. There's like ice bags everywhere.
Oh, yeah. Of course. Yeah. You know, so just to your point of it's not always a bad thing, that depending on what your goal is, obviously.
Yeah,
if you
look at the good
part of it. Yeah, Jocko Willink, man. Type that in. YouTube that, because the video is cool too.
Yeah.
Jocko Willink, good. Sick video.
So not to beat this documentary to death, but I just got a couple more points.
Okay.
Okay, and I think it's important. This is something parents can use from this too, right? Or people going to super teams and stuff. So the documentary also speaks of, you know, the guys speaking, and it also speak of why this team was so successful.
Which team?
The New England Patriots, right? And it kind of starts with the coach, right? Because he said that one of the things that he did, because there was a, like, one of the, what was his lawyer, Malloy? He was like a really good safety, actually Tom Brady's friend from college and stuff. And he was like one of the best safeties. And then they canned him, and they got a guy named Rodney Harrison coming in, and he was not the same quality of player.
Okay.
And everyone's like, what the hell is he doing? And then the team was actually better. And he made a couple moves like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's what Tom Brady said. That's where I really realized my first taste of pro football, that this is a business, that it's not about friendships. It's not about loyalty. It's about who can make my team better.
Right.
So this is a really good statement of what Belichick, the coach, said. He said, this is not a collection of talent. The team is not a collection of talent. It's a team that's assembled to fit together and work as a team to win. So that's where that lawyer Malloy was a great player, but they found a guy that would be better for the team. And what they said, what he said to him, what they said about the Harrison guy that came in, is like, actually, this is what happened. So he knocked a guy out in his own team when he was playing in San Diego, I think it was, in warmups in a game with a hit. And so he got sitting across like this at an interview. Maybe he's going to sign with the New England Patriots. So they're discussing it, and the coach Belichick goes, so I saw you knock that guy out in warm up. And he goes, how the hell would you see that? And what he realizes, this coach notices everything, like everything, all the little things. And he goes, I'm signing right here. This guy knows what he's doing. But the point of that is Belichick was like, I need a guy that's going to push my players. And as good as this other player is, I need this mental case to come into practice and keep everybody so sharp and not give a rip what anybody thinks. And that's what his attitude was, to make this team better. And that's what they got out of it. So it's not the best safety. So let's say in hockey, the best centerman doesn't mean that that's the best fit for your team, right? And you might need someone that's does something a little bit different that brings another element, yeah, right? To bring everybody up. Mm-hmm. Might be a leadership quality. It might be whatever. So this goes to what we've talked about. And, you know, I've never said it this way because I actually never, I couldn't put the words together, is when you go to a super team and, you know, you're playing in the big cities and you go, okay, now we need two more guys. We haven't lost a game in 2 years. Why do we need to make our team better? It doesn't mean that they're the best team. It's the best fit. Then they lose to, you know, they can lose to a lower level team that has mm-hmm. something else. That collection of players doesn't necessarily mean it's the best thing.
Yep.
The best teams are going to be teams that have different roles and people accept different roles. And that was the other thing that Rodney Harrison said. He said, I was not playing football to make friends. I was there to win. And I didn't care if you liked it or not. I don't care. I'm here to win and do my thing and to compete every single day in practice. And this team would be like, they're talking in the documentary. It's like, guys would walk out of the, you know, see each other in the hallways or whatever and say, hey, did you do video yet? He goes, oh, yeah, I did 2 hours there. He goes, oh, yeah, I did three. And it was like constant, oh, you're leaving the gym already? What'd you eat today? And it was constantly about raising the tide.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So that's great.
Yeah. And then compete every day. And he said the reason that it's important to compete every day, he goes, because Rodney Harrison extended his career a few years. He was about ready to go. And he said, I competed so hard every day because you never know who's knocking on the door. He goes, there's always someone knocking.
Yeah.
And he goes, I was competing until someone knocked that door down.
Mm-hmm.
It was just, it's such a good documentary. So if you can't read or if you don't have the time to read or you're not interested in reading, this is a really good place to start. And it's just so good for parents, for coaches, for players. Unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, one thought I had bringing in the competitive guy. You ever see the Rocket Richard movie? It came out.
I don't think I've seen it. Maybe.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
But yeah, I remember I saw I've seen it a few times. And there's a moment where the Canadian, like when he started playing for Montreal, the Canadians were just not good.
Right.
And so he was same kind of story. He didn't come in as like a superstar from the movie. Maybe he was, but from the way the movie presented it is he was a top player, but he wasn't like a superstar. And a lot of teams were skeptical about him because he had been injured before.
Okay.
So they thought Montreal was nervous about signing him because he had some injuries. So anyways, the one scene in the movie that sticks out, reminds me of what you're talking about, is the coach comes in and tells him he's scratched in front of the team. And he goes over and rips the stick rack down. Like he's getting changed when the coach comes in and tells him he's scratched. So he puts his shirt back on, goes and he grabs the stick rack and he chucks it, like all the sticks all over the dressing room, whatever. And the coach just like, as he throws a tantrum walking out, he was just saying to the team, like, that's what I want. Like, I need some jam. Like, somebody give me something, right? This guy's got jam. And he did it on purpose to show the team a message. I'm not saying throwing a temper tantrum is the best thing to do ever, but you get the point, right? He's trying to send a message. And
he was legit.
He's a competitor. Pissed. He's a competitor. And it's like, this guy was legit pissed off that he doesn't get to go out there and do battle, you know? Because he was one of those guys. And I'm too young to... I never got to see him play, but he was everything. He scored goals. He got in fights. He was he was a competitor. You know, and that reminded me of that. And then the other thing is there's a young team around here, just to the point of the super teams.
Yeah.
That the guys we've heard a lot about, and they were one of those teams that they hadn't lost a game. You know, they had assembled. They had brought in guys from out of town. They were doing some like billeting type things or housing kids so
bringing
that they
people
could have,
in.
Yeah, bringing people in.
Yeah.
That great or on paper great coach that played in the NHL and all this kind of stuff. And I don't think they lost one game. I think they won their final game like 7-1 for their league or something. Then they went to this bigger tournament and that had a whole bunch of teams from all over the place. And they ended
up
finishing
Canada, even international.
Yeah, international across Canada. They ended up finishing 13th or 14th. And the team that they beat in the finals of their league finished third or fourth or something, you know? And it's just kind of a message more for coaches than anything. And maybe teeing it up, going into your next part, is it's not always about, like you were saying, who the best players are on the team, you know. And any another just another cliche example is in Miracle, when you know, Herb Brooks is picking the team and whatever, and Craig, the assistant coach, is like, "You're missing some of the best players." And he's like, "I'm not looking for the best players. I'm looking for the right ones."
Yep.
You know, and that's a good way to think about your team as a coach, whether you're just starting or you're further along in your coaching career. It's not always about who the best players are, because a lot of times too many good players on the same team is a conflict, you know?
It was when I coached more or less a super team.
That's right. And it's very intuitive to think about, right? Because if you have every guy on your team that wants the puck all the time, or you got six guys on your team that are shooters, it's like there's not that many shots that are going to be taken in that game.
Yeah.
You know, not everybody can have the puck all the time, you know? So that's, you're creating an environment where there's going to be some conflict. And it's not that it never works out, especially when you're younger. In the younger years, it's easier to get away with. But as you start to get older, having the best players on your team doesn't mean that you're going to have the best team. Because a lot of times it'll breed conflict, dressing room conflict, conflict between teammates, conflicts between parents.
And youth, the parents and you, start. Right.
Yeah, I'm talking more particularly about youth. And if you gauge that compared to junior teams or pro teams, none of the teams are like that. There's no super team, right? There's no NHL team that's a super team. There's no junior team that's a super team. There are teams that are better than other teams, but you have your top six, you have your grind guys, you have your PK guys, you have roles.
Yeah.
Not everybody is just, you have three, four lines of guys that can score. You know, that doesn't really happen a lot. And the higher you go, the less it happens.
Yeah, that's right. And it's like when I was coaching in Detroit, we had a really, really good team. And I couldn't have tryouts. I said, no one's taking these guys' spots. And I didn't have a pulse on the holes. They kind of gave me the team. They said, here's your team. Yeah. I said, okay, cool. But that's what happened, right? Everybody thought they were the first line center.
Yeah, that's right.
You put someone on a second power play and mom and dad were losing it. It's like, but they are. Yeah. And I'm being generous.
Yeah.
Right? And then there's kids that, you know, they were like more of the grinders, and those the parents that were the parents of the kids that are supposedly stars, they would lose their shit. They gave someone a captain who was like just a really hard working leader, an actual dressing room leader. The kids all loved him, worked hard through the checks and stuff like that. I gave him the captain, and I had a dad call me and just say, like, I'm not going to use the words, but he said, are you trying to piss on my kid? I'm like, what?
Yeah.
Like, what am I, like, I got, who am I going to pick for a captain? The best hockey player? Who is it, by the way?
Right.
You know, because everyone's really good. So anyways, it's not fun. In fact, what you want to have is when you're assembling a team, if you can figure this out, is you want to have guys on your team that they know that they're not, or maybe they are the best guy on the team, but they don't care who gets the glory. They're just willing to do the job and really try to win. And that's what you want. Because if you're on my team and you get all the press and you get the all the glory and everyone's talking about you, that's fine. But at the end of the day, did we win? And that's what you want, a whole bunch of kids that care about that.
That's right.
That's the most important thing. And if it means I'm a penalty killer but I still think I can score goals, I'll go penalty kill.
Yeah.
All good. Is it good for the team? Okay, I'll do it.
Yeah, and that's a hard lesson to teach.
Yeah.
There's enough success for everyone. Like, you don't have, if I do well, it doesn't mean you have to do poorly. You know, and that's what I find it's a hard thing for kids to understand, is that, and this goes onto the parents too, the coaches, like, you have to instill this lesson, is there's enough for everyone to be successful when you're playing at any level. But if you're playing youth hockey particularly, it's like, if you everybody needs to be successful for the team to be successful, for us to win, for everyone to get attention, which is what most people want, because most kids want to go on and play at junior level or whatever afterwards, get drafted, all that kind of stuff. So if you think that your success is going to be limited by someone else on your team being successful, then that's going to cause a problem. And that's to your point of when you were coaching in Detroit, right? You think that because somebody else plays the power play more than you, that somehow is going to affect your opportunity to show yourself or whatever. It's like, well, if the team is good and the team wins, the scouts watch everybody. They're not watching one guy, you know? if they have a particular guy they're interested in, they'll watch one guy. But at the start, when the scouts first start coming out to watch games, they're seeing everybody. They're looking at everybody, you know? And your amount of power play time or whatever isn't going to make or break you as a player, you know? And you don't need somebody else to not play the power play so that you get to play more, so that you get seen more. That isn't how it works, man. And that's why it's important to have, you want to have a good dynamic of guys that understand the role, like you're talking about, whether you're a penalty killer or whether you're a guy that plays shut down D or whatever. That's why it's important to know what you're good at, do the things you're good at, because not everybody's going to be able to be that the first line player, you know? So opportunity that's going to somebody else doesn't mean you're not getting any, you know? Yeah. And that's an easy way that I see that a lot with minor hockey kids and parents. It's like they think that because this kid's getting more, my kid's getting less. And that's not really the dynamic, you know?
It's funny, I had a kid that played on my team in Detroit that wasn't the top, like he wasn't the top three. He was very close, but in a different way, he was our top one. You know, he wasn't considered the big name.
Right.
See, I did air quotes.
Mm-hmm.
I never do those. Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty good. But he wasn't considered the big name.
Yeah.
He was on our team and he had speed and he back checked and forechecked. He wasn't a great goal scorer, but he did penalty kill. Like just, it was impressive, but he was never considered that big name. And he was one of the three that signed. Well, no. There was only two guys on that team that signed NHL, drafted and signed NHL, and he was one of them.
Really?
Yep.
That's really cool.
And there's other guys that were supposed to be the studs.
Yeah, man, it's hard. It's hard. I don't necessarily blame people. Like when you're in it, it's really difficult to see outside of just your area and your team and your world and I get that sense. Like I remember talking on the phone with a couple of the minor hockey coaches from around this area. And I remember one call in particular, the coach was talking to me about like where they're drawing the boundaries between teams and which guys that means they'll be able to get and all this stuff. And these guys are like 13 or whatever. And I'm just thinking like, you actually think this is that consequential?
Yeah.
Like your life is all consumed with the Windsor Essex County borders of where the two teams are going to be drawn for which players you get for the 13-year-old team. It's like, dude, like zoom out, man. Like if you zoom out a little bit, you'll realize there's a lot more out there, you know, but it's hard. I know I'm not saying that as a, you know, as a shot at anybody or at anything. It's just that is what the framing is. This is your world and this is what you get caught up in, man. And I can understand that, but it's really important that you try, if you're a player, if you're a coach, if you're whoever, parent, you got to try to zoom out and understand how much bigger it gets outside of your team, your league, your little space that you're really consumed with, you know?
Yeah.
But
I get for coaches, like the easiest way to coach is try to get the best players.
Mm-hmm.
Then most of your games, you're going to be looking pretty good. When it gets to the nitty gritty, it becomes a little bit tougher. So I can understand where coaches go. If I could just not have these couple kids on my team and just improve it, then it'd be better. So if our boundaries are bigger, we could take better kids or more choice.
Well, then you
actually
have to coach, though. That's the thing, right? If you just have a collection of the best players, then you don't really have to coach. Like if the kids are just
true.
If the kids are just better, they can go and do anything. They're just better,
you
know? But when you actually have to do some structure and some systems and teach the kids a lesson and teach them how to battle because there's other teams that are better than them or as good as them or whatever, then that's when you actually have to start coaching.
Right.
You know, if you just have this, all the superstars, you don't actually ever have to do anything.
That's right.
You know, you could do anything and they'll win. They're just better.
More or less.
So
more or less till you play against a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to explain the question or you want me?
I can do it. So this kind of, we're kind of leading into it anyways, which is nice, but we had one of our members online was sent in a question asking about kind of beginner level coaching, like we're kind of talking about a little bit now. And they were just curious saying that they're starting to get into coaching and they don't have a ton of experience or a ton of people to look at in their area for as a good example of how to run a team when you're just starting out. So for the rest of the episode here, I want you to talk about some coaching themes or tips or fill in the blank with whatever word you want to use for coaches that are more beginner level. So
okay, so it's beginner level.
More beginner
level. Meaning like beginner been, coaches or beginner youth, coaches like youth
either. So if you're okay. if you're just starting out being a coach, so yes. we can cover like a couple different ages. Okay. So it's going to be in youth hockey.
Okay.
And let's say like on 50, well, I guess it could, you wouldn't really be, you're probably not going to be a first year coach if you're coaching a draft year team.
Right.
But beginner level, so it'd be younger than that.
So let's say 11 so, and
yeah,
down.
Yeah, right. Something like that, 12 and down, whatever. Right. Just starting out as a coach, just some tips for structuring your team, skill stuff, actually training them on the ice, and then behind the bench, like how you're actually your coaching styles
okay.
and what you should be focused on behind the bench. Okay. You know, so some of the, that's, we'll try to keep it specific to that because we've done as maybe a prelude to this, we did a episode called Coaching 101 where we touched kind of generally on a lot of these themes.
Yeah.
But here we're going to try to gear it more specifically to like the more beginner level stuff. Okay. So we'll keep it within that context for this episode. And then if people want something more specific in another area, we can do that too. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So first of all, like anybody that wants to get into coaching, I'm like, awesome, because we need good coaches. And preferably when you do it, you're in it for the right reasons, right? A lot of times people coach and when they're young, and you want to be competitive 100%, but we have to look at what level we're coaching. So we're looking at this younger level. I think the most important thing right now is to have a good development for them. And development comes in different ways. Development comes both on the ice, and it becomes your behavior off the ice. Not that you're telling them, teach them to be good kids, but the message can't just always be about hockey, because it's not all about hockey. It's about life. Yep. Right. But being a hockey coach, as the statement I said a couple of weeks ago that I read, is that I guess a hockey coach has more influence than a lot of parents do.
Yep.
So this is a really important thing is understand that a kid will look at you as a coach and he's going to think that you're awesome or he's going to hate your guts. Mm-hmm. And kind of almost no in between.
Yeah. Sorry. Let me interrupt you for sure. Cause this is just a little quick side story that I think was interesting. So last night I went to a graduation for a school that does some training here.
Right.
And I run their class when they're here to do their training stuff. And so I was listening to the valedictorian do her speech, and she made mention of me specifically in the speech. And it was really interesting because I saw this particular class, I saw once a week for the year, so not a whole lot of time, but she made mention of me in the speech.
Unreal.
And so my point of that is, as a coach, it's, you don't realize how much you end up impacting kids or how much they can, and not, I'm not saying I had the biggest impact on these kids ever or anything, but just the fact that I was mentioned means that they think something of me. They pay, absolutely. They pay attention to what I'm telling them, or they, whatever, however they value that, it means something to them, you know? So as a coach, it's going in with the right, for the right reasons. That should be like number one, is you understand that the kids are going to be paying attention to what you're doing. So if one day you want to be a coach and that's a reason why you're starting coaching, because you want to see, that's fine. But if you're starting at the youth level, your number one concern, motivation, whatever, should be you're trying to help these kids be better in their sport and be better people, because that,
and enjoy it.
And yeah, because that is what's going to happen, whether that's your goal or not. You're either going to make them enjoy it, do better, be better, or you're going to make them hate it, do worse, be worse.
Yeah.
Regardless of your motivation, you're going to get one of those two results, you know? So understanding that is important. So sorry to interrupt.
No, that's good. I'm glad you do. The next thing is, it's good that you put yourself in the fire, get involved. Like a lot of people, it's the thinking about coaching and am I good enough? Like, especially if you're new and you got a group of kids, it's like, as much as it seems simple, you got 8-year-old kids, I'll just go coach them hockey. You have to know a little bit about hockey, like a little bit. And you have to be, you can't be intimidated by speaking to them about hockey, because it's like they're looking for you for answers or whatever. And, you got to get in the fire and you got to get going. That's number one. And you're going to learn on the fly, because the thing is that you're not going to know everything, even though you might be, I'll tell you what, man, you can play hockey and then you go coach a team and it's going to teach or to explain things or to get a message across. You might say, I don't even know what I'm doing. Where do I start? Like, really, where do I start coaching a hockey team? How do I start?
Mm-hmm.
right? Picking positions, everything. Like, what kind of type of, how am I going to get my message across to kids how we play hockey? So you have to start somewhere, but you have to start. Yeah. It's really important. And you're going to realize that you don't know everything. Even though you might have played, you don't know everything. You're going to learn a ton just by coaching kids and making your own mistakes and stuff. And the other thing that's going to be really important to know going in, no matter how nice of a person you are and how good your intentions are going to be, parents are going to give you a hard time, period.
Yep.
It's and you could be at the absolute lowest level of hockey at the youngest ages, and you're still going to have parents that are not happy. So just know that going in, that's non-negotiable. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
It's going to happen.
Yep.
So be ready to deal with that. And then when parents have things to say, I mean, this is why I say, this is the other thing, is know why you're coaching and know who you are and be yourself. Because if you try to be someone else, it doesn't work. You got to just know, I'm making these decisions or I have this philosophy because that's who I am. And if you are who you are, then it'll be fine. But if you try to go outside of that thing, it's really hard to coach people and keep everybody happy.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to keep people happy. Go ahead.
I think the pulling out of that, the fact that it's not going to be perfect and just start is really important. And I remember kind of a related note, I was talking to one of my buddies a while ago. He wanted to start a podcast.
Right.
And he kept telling me about his plan. Yep. Right. And it was like, yeah, the last five times we've talked, it's been 3 months and we've keep talking about your plan. It's like, it's just start, dude. Yeah. If you think you're going to start it perfect and it's going to be perfect, it's not going to be perfect. So as a coach, if you don't have a lot of experience, you need the experience. You need to make the mistakes so you can figure out how to start tweaking stuff.
Right.
So have a rough outline of what you think you're going to do. I'm not saying go in without any plan, like make a plan, but then go and start doing it. Take the action so that you can find out where you're wrong and you can start to fix it.
Yeah.
And the key to that is you have to be honest as a coach too, especially when you're not experienced. People are going to come to you. Kids are going to ask you questions. Parents are going to ask you questions. And sometimes you won't know the answer, and you should be able to say, I don't know the answer. Having the humility to say that, because you are just starting out as a coach. So you don't need to be embarrassed or insecure about that part of it, because you know that you don't have the experience yet. So come by it honestly, do the best that you can do, but don't be so caught up about it being perfect that it keeps you from doing as good a job as you could do, because you're just really concerned about it needs to be perfect and ideal, because it's not going to be.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So I would say, like, if you're starting, especially if you're brand new to coaching, I would say have an idea about hockey. It's important, a little bit anyways, that, you know, like, even if you have to take and I think most organizations do have some sort of course to teach you a little bit of hockey
There's
some resources. So you got to just figure out which ones work the best for you, but it's just to get used to that kind of stuff. And then when you're going in there, kind of have a philosophy, right? So the philosophy being, like, I think if you're coaching 8-year-old house league or like a low level travel, I don't know if your emphasis, or even AAA, I don't know if your emphasis needs to be on winning. I think it should be more on development, and winning can be a byproduct if you do things properly.
Yep.
And I think it should be mostly skill development, and you sprinkle some hockey systems and processes in there, like how to break out properly, like maybe even forechecking a little bit, but nothing too crazy as a young guy.
Just
you gotta let some
positions,
let them go play some hockey,
right?
And with a lot of skill work. And then as you move up, with 13 or let's say you start at 7 or 8 year old kids, and then as you move up to higher levels and higher age groups, then obviously just doing skill work doesn't make a good hockey team. The kids want to actually learn how to play hockey too, so you want to learn and brush up and add a little bit of system work as you move along. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So would you say that, maybe kind of talking about a little bit of the differences between age and house league, AA, AAA kind of thing. So younger, you want to do more just like kind of skill stuff, letting them play the game and figure it out with some basic structure and systems if they can handle it. And then as you go up, so let's say you're with a little bit older team, like 12 or 13 year olds, and maybe they're AA, AAA. Now we should be doing more team-based things in terms of systems and structure and all that. Does that make sense, the difference between those two? Because I'm thinking, just noticing the kids that we train, when you're younger, the kids, their season is when they do hockey.
Yes.
You know, as they start to get older, the individual skill stuff, a lot of those kids go do on their own. So I feel like that becomes less important as they get older, doing the individual stuff. You still want to have some, but you want it more in the team context, the team setting, in the system that you're trying to teach and all that kind of stuff? Is that kind of...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I don't know if I can answer it exactly. So I'll just say it this way. So yes, when you're younger, it needs to be skill-based. Why?
You don't have any skills yet.
Because you don't have skills.
Yeah.
That's right. You haven't touched the puck enough. You haven't skated enough. You haven't shot the puck enough, right? Even if you're a good little young guy, you haven't done enough of it. So you need to work on skills. So if you start working on who needs to go first on the puck and you need a high guy here, and that's not important right now. You can add little sprinkles of that.
Right.
What I would add in is with the younger group is because, okay, going through pylons at that age is fine, right? That's fine, doing all that kind of stuff. What I would add in is like passing, like the simplest form of passing drills, like stationary with maybe, you know, what do you call that? Exchanging lines and stuff like that while you're carrying the puck.
Follow your pass kind of stuff.
Follow your pass, yeah. Like the most basic things like that, because that's skill building. And because here's the thing. What people have to understand when you play hockey, any sport, is you want to play the actual sport. So doing the skill drills is all fine, especially younger kids. They just want to play. And now we have like the organization saying, okay, you're only allowed to play half ice. I don't have a problem with that, by the way, but a lot of people do. So kids want to just play hockey. So what I would do in those drills, the skill drills when you're younger, is you have to add the competitive edge to get the best out of the kids.
Like gamify it a bit?
Yeah, so small area games or races, things where they have to compete a little bit and, you know, put something at the end like, you know, you could push-ups, a lap, or slushies for the winner. Like, it doesn't have to be big, but have something where they want to win.
Yeah.
Because what you'll find is a lot of people, even older guys, right? They do drills, and it's like I told you about the one guy that really good player, but he's a really good OHL player, but in practices he doesn't care. He doesn't see the point.
Mm-hmm.
But if there's something on the line, that might get him to go a little bit harder. So when you're young, that's what I would do. Lots of skill drills. There's you can just, you know, for the purpose of this, you can go online and find a whole bunch of stick handling drills. There's a million of them out there if you wanted to. US hockey, if you're American or Canadian, there's books of small area games, and just go play them. Go play those. Those are great. So what I would say, that if you break up a practice, it's an hour, it's really 50 minutes. You know, you do some skating. You could do skating with races, but just some skating. You don't have to be the best teacher, by the way. Right? For an 8-year-old kid, house league or low level or even 12-year-old, you don't have to be the best teacher at it. Just have them do repetitions, and they'll by default get a little bit better. And then start off with that, add some pucks to it, do some small passing drills, then get into some small area games with competition. And I think that's your best bet moving forward. You don't have to be a genius. So as you hone your practices and you see what's the best for those kids, then you can keep your best, get rid of the ones that you don't like that much. Yep. And really, obviously the younger they are and the less talented they are, the less you can do. So it's very, very simple stuff. The one thing that I would say when you're coaching at that level, though, is not necessarily the skill side. It's the effort side. The fun side and the effort side. Make it fun and ask for effort. And the effort, you really don't have to go that deep. You don't have to be Newt Rockne to get the effort out if you have small area games with something on the line a little bit. Now, you're going to get some kids that cry because they lost because they're young.
Yeah.
But we'll deal with that part.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the goal is I'm a coach, coaching young guys. Maybe they're good. Maybe they're low level. My point of this is that let them touch the puck. Let them play games. Let them pass the puck. Don't get too instructional on anything.
Yep.
And then in the games when they do play, you can point out a thing here too, but I promise you they're not listening.
Yeah.
They're not. Effort, 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 and fun, fun, fun. That's how you coach youth hockey.
So what age and what level would you, that whole frame that you just gave out, where do we draw the line of where things start to shift? So what age to what age, what level to what level is what you just said appropriate?
Yeah. I would say once you get to about U13, so after Pee-wee, that's the old words. I think it's U13, Bantam, where there's body checking now. It's actually real hockey. You kind of weeded out some of the kids. You got probably more of a look of what your hockey team is going to look like for the next couple of years.
Right.
Then you start at, like, not start, but now it's like a little bit more about playing the game of hockey because your brain can actually take it. You can absorb it. You don't have kids just trying to score goals anymore all the time, right? When you're younger, it's like, let them play, sprinkle a few things in there. But once you get into Bantam, it's like, okay, this is how we're going to learn. This is how we play hockey now.
Okay.
Your practices now are going to be, not that you didn't do breakouts before or you didn't do a forecheck or anything like that, but now it's going to look, now it's actually important.
Right? Yes, and this would be zones. For like the, we're still talking like, now we're talking like double A, triple A type level. It's not, if you're still playing house league at that level, like kids want to play. They don't necessarily
care. 100%. They don't want to get, that's the thing. You got to know who your audience is, right?
Yeah.
So if you're coaching like a really low level of hockey, that doesn't sound negative, does it? It's just is what it is.
Yeah, it is what it is.
Okay, then the kids don't. They want to be good at. I'm sure they want to be good at it, but they're not dying to be the best penalty killer
they're
in the league.
They're not going home and practicing hours and hours and
right.
hours and hours.
Yeah. So they want to go out and have fun, and you got to coach appropriately, right? So a lot of games and stuff. But now, when you get to a little bit higher level, then obviously you need to break out the puck properly, forecheck somewhat properly, have some. Resemblance of a system. Do you have to spend all the time in the world on it? No. So this is where, because you can get really caught up in systems, right? There's a fine line, and I think for everybody in youth hockey is the system. If you're all about systems, then kids start playing like robots, right? Mm-hmm. And it's like, okay, am I allowed to go here now? Well, you know, because there's some parents that don't really understand hockey too. I remember when I first started teaching around here, and I'd go to watch some of the kids play, and I'd hear a dad just losing his mind because his son was a right winger and the left winger went in his corner. But he's going home listening to that stuff too, right? Like, so you're hearing all these things. It's like, let them play. And this is when they, I think, are an Adam. So just let them play. And they will figure it out. Once they get to, like, Pee-wee, you start explaining a little bit of how hockey's played. And Bantam, it tightens up. And Midget, or you 16, 17, 18, it becomes, you got to play hockey, right? But so how do you not overcoach systems, right? The simplest way is you play a ton of small area games. You figure hockey out when you do those kind of things. You're creating two-on-ones, moving the puck, and you learn how to get open.
Yeah.
And that's you're learning how to defend in small areas.
Yeah, so then what would you say about, if I'm a beginner coach and I really don't know much about systems or appropriate systems, how am I learning that? Like, what would you suggest in terms of how do I learn what systems I should use? Where should I go to learn them? And then how should I implement that with my team? So basically it's like let's say I have a 13-year-old AAA team or 14-year-old AAA team.
Okay.
What's appropriate for them in terms of systems? And where do I learn that information to make sure that I'm not overdoing it or underdoing it? If that makes sense. Because for me, just as an example, I had no systems at all till I was probably, when I was in my midget minor year, we started to learn some system things. Up until that, we had nothing and it was awful, like terrible. So
yeah.
Kind of that's the
question.
Yeah,
it's going to, so here's another thing. You got to look at what your team's all about, right? So if you've got like a really fast team, like really fast, good skating team, then you can say, okay, so I want to use that asset. Right. Maybe you're a good puck moving team. You want to use that asset. So your systems are going to look something that will work with that. So maybe you're doing a lot of short passes. Maybe you're stretching guys out things. Maybe you have the luxury of having 2-3 guys on a forecheck and take away room. Right.
Yep.
So that might be, okay, you got that. So if you got the opposite of that, and I'll get to the end of the question after. If you got the opposite of that, you got like a real slow, you know, you had tryouts and, you know, you got 16 guys that tried out and you got a 18-man roster. You know that you got slim pickings and you're waiting someone gets cut from another team, so you're getting the crumbs.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you know that you're going to have, you won't be competing with the Toronto Marlies or the CompuWare teams or the Chicago Mission. So what do you do? Well, to give your kids, if it's about winning and developing, they're learning something too, then okay, well, we're not going to keep up with them, so we have to counter that. So how do we counter that? Well, obviously, we're going to have to be more of a defensive team, a little bit of a muck and grind team, ham and eggers, as they say. So you have to learn that. So, okay, nice, Andy. Where do you go for that? Well, one, you can talk to coaches, but you don't want to get too complicated. Or youth hockey typically has the skeleton of drills or systems that you can use, right? What was the other thing? Oh, and then there are coaching clinics out there. But from my perspective, coaching clinics are not very good from what I've seen, because most of them are, you know, it's really good that Barry Trotz comes in and speaks, but it probably has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, you have to just know the identity of your team. So let's just say you live in Windsor, Ontario, right? Because this happens a lot. And a coach comes up and say, Andy, can I pick your brain for a couple minutes? Can I get you to run a practice or two to show them? Yeah, for sure. And then they have an idea. And then you actually spend time with the coach a little bit to explain, and not over explain, but to explain how they can make it work. So that's a couple ways that I would do it.
Yeah. So the one thing I was just writing down here is we talk about players all the time and how important it is to have a brain. And equally important for coaching, if you're a coach, you got to have a brain. So the first thing, just summarizing what you said, and then you tell me if I got it wrong.
Okay.
You need to know your team.
Yes, know what you have.
So before you decide what systems you're going to use, so you can't go into your year with your systems before you know your team.
Right.
Because now you're going to be applying things that might not work with what your team can do.
Yeah.
So if you have a bunch of kids that they just cannot figure out what you're saying to them, where it's like they are not able to grasp more complex topics and whatever, but you already have five systems where there's all kinds of shit happening at the same time, it's going to explode. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
Right. So first is you need to know the team, and you've talked about it before, have your team identity and how the team plays. You know, how are they going to play? Are they going to play fast? Are they playing muck and grind? Are they playing defensive? Whatever it is that you decide, know that first. And then you can go to the book that Hockey Canada gave you, or you can go to YouTube if you want to, or you can go wherever, because this is more beginner level stuff,
mm-hmm.
and figure out what will apply to the strengths of those teams. What will they effectively be able to accomplish? And most of the time it's going to end up being, from my perspective, is things that are just simple. You want to keep it simple because they're still young.
Absolutely.
They're just starting to learn what they're doing. But you want it to be things that play into the strengths of that team that you've identified what they got. Does that make sense? Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly what I was saying. But even as you get when you get with the older kids again, Charlie just walked in here, but like the same thing with them, right? They do their practices, they do their systems, all that stuff. But what do they really love to do? They like to do some competition. Yeah. We play a game. Charlie asked me the other day when we were on the ice. I said, "Hey, Dad, can we do a small area thing at the end instead of doing this?" I said, Yeah, we'll do that. They love it, right? So they're going to learn in an environment where it's fun, right? And doing things where they can compete. So again,
you still want to keep that.
It never goes away.
It never goes away.
Yeah. Like the simple things really are the things that help. Because the other thing is once you if a kid does move on to junior and stuff, then the systems are like huge. Mm-hmm. That's you have to play within a system, or else you don't get to play. That'll come, and it'll be different than you ever learned before, anyways.
Yeah, I feel like, and I really at some point I'm gonna want to do the whole coaching deal to see what it's like behind the bench perspective. But I think it's just important, like I mentioned a minute ago, is keeping it simple, because you kind of want to just teach them to be able to understand a system. So it doesn't have to be complicated, but you need them to know that I have to be able to do this plan, however simple it is, so that they have the skill of grasping concepts when they get to the higher levels, when the systems actually become, there's a million that each team has, right? There's D zone, O zone, neutral zone, face off plays, power play, penalty kill, breakouts, control breakouts. There's a million of everything. So if you want them to be familiar with a coach giving them a plan that they need to execute.
Yeah. Right? So when you're taking low level young players or whatever, it could be as simple as we always want two guys on the puck. If there's two guys on the puck or battling for a puck, we need one guy away from the puck defending, whether it's offensive zone or defensive zone defending.
Mm-hmm.
That's a system.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's simple.
And I think, to cut you off, part is explaining the why part of it too, mm-hmm. why we're doing this.
Yep.
Because if you just say, okay, we want two guys on the puck, I think it's important to know, to explain to them, this is why we're going to use this system as our team.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have a really fast team, so you want to be a little over aggressive in the O-zone because you know you'll have guys that can get back. Yep. Explain that. Yep. We're going to put two guys on the puck, not just for the good of my health, but because you guys are good skaters and I know that you'll be able to get back.
Yeah.
You know, so framing it and actually teaching them about why they're using the system, not just throwing.
Yeah. And vice versa. Right. We're only going to go not too aggressive kids because we're playing the Chicago Mission. They're really fast. We're, you know, We're ranked 312th in Ontario.
Yeah.
So we have to find a way to slow them down. So we're going to make them have to work to get through the, down the ice.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So speaking behind the bench
is
that's another whole thing. This is what most coaches do, and this is a huge mistake. It's okay to be – no. Most coaches think that coaching is rah-rah, motivational speeches all the time. And if you go in there with energy and even in practice, they say, you know, I've seen this so many times. Like people go, man, the coach is intense. Like it's awesome. He's intense. And I'll see it and I'll go, he's not really intense. He's actually just yelling and screaming and trying to get some energy or trying to look like he knows what he's doing. But there's not a lot of good quality stuff coming out of his boosh, right? So coaching isn't about giving a motivational speech every day. Now, having said that, there's some people like I have the ability to be able to, when I would go in my dress rooms and stuff, have a message that would elevate their...
Get them fired up kind of thing?
Yeah, but it wasn't necessarily to get them to go rah-rah. It was to get them to like, okay, I'm into it. Or
right.
It might be like, get them knowing why they're playing hard and stuff. Like, so I had that ability. Not everybody does. But mine wasn't like rah-rah. Mm-hmm. It was like purposeful and stuff. So, but then there's a lot of people that like I could tell them the most motivating story, or it could happen right in front of their face, and they'll walk into the dressing room and they just the demeanor and everything about them is just like, hey guys, let's go. And they're, you know, they sound like they're giving you know, their accountants giving the financial data from a Fortune 500 company, and the kids are sitting there falling asleep, right? It's no good. Right?
That's right.
But they do, and they talk, and they talk, and they speak, and they go through every detail and stuff, and it's like...
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So there's a fine line. So the thing is it's not about motivational speeches. Have short little messages. But what it is about is ensuring that... Like, this is where I said work ethic. Always ensure that they're working hard. Right? So a kid can appreciate that. So, like I said, if you're 8 years old or if you're 14 years old, and you're AAA or you're not, I think most people like to be told that they've worked hard or they could, I think you could do a little bit better,
yeah.
Right? So it's coaching effort is number one. Coaching effort, and then the next part would be if there are systems in your thing, is coach the system, right? So you're not just saying, guys, let's work hard because it means nothing, right? It's hey, Charlie. You that shift that you just did there, do you see what happened when you went to that puck and you knocked it off his stick? I know you don't think it was a goal, but that kept it in their end for an extra 30 seconds. That's good job, buddy. And then he goes, oh, okay, I did something good. That's encouraging. I'm going to do that again.
Yeah.
And then a lot of coaches, so the opposite of that is what a lot of people do is like if they're not giving motivational speeches, they walk around with a furry eyeball all the time looking at kids and trying to find their mistakes and just barking at mistakes. That's not necessary. It's actually helpful, but it's not helpful now for youth hockey, right? There's a way to explain it. So I think so let's say I'm going to use Charlie sitting here right now. So we do that same example I just used for Charlie. You go, hey, comes to the bench. You go, hey, Charlie, when you went to go get that puck, you went to knock it off your stick. But what happened there? Your feet weren't moving. What happened when your feet aren't moving? He got the puck out, and then we were back checking. So we had a chance to keep it in. And if you just put that little bit more effort, moving your feet a little bit more, getting there, like really, really want that puck. You know what's going to happen, son? You're going to have that puck in the zone. You're probably going to score a goal.
Yeah.
So that's the same. It's a message, but in a way that he's learning. So he's probably going to take that message instead of saying you need to move your feet or why were you lazy or you know whatever the negative thing is. But if you sandwich it into something like you were doing a good job until here, but you had to just fix that. Next time you do it, good things are going to happen.
Yeah.
So that's how you learn, right?
I think what you're kind of packaging up, the first part of that you were talking about was you kind of have to know yourself as a coach too. So you were saying about the motivational speech thing, like you as a coach, you have that ability where you can be a little bit more motivational when you get all fired up. Like it's inspiring to listen to and you can get the kids going. Not everybody has that ability and kids are very good judges of pretend, right? So it's important that you're genuine and you are who you are
for sure
to the kids because the kids pick up on bullshit right away.
Yeah.
They don't have to say it. They wouldn't even know that they are picking up on it, but they can tell very easily if you're not genuine or if you're not doing things that you would normally do or say yourself, you know? Yeah. So I think it's important that you be who you are, be genuine about it, be honest about it and all that kind of stuff. And Don't try to put yourself into the mold of what you think a coach should be if it's not something that you actually have within yourself to do.
Yeah,
I think that's important because kids read that right away. So you don't have to go in and be the rah-rah guy just because you think that's what coaches do. You know, you can be, because me as a coach, like the guys that when I'm training the kids in here, I'm not a rah-rah guy. Like the odd time I'll get hype just like because if they're doing a big lift or whatever, because that's fun. But I'm not like a yell and scream and get in your grill. Like I never do that with these guys. Because to me, like what I laid out with them at the start is it's not my job at their age. It's not my job to make you work hard. You work hard, right? If you don't want to work hard, I'm not going to make you work hard, you know? So I don't have that in me where I'm real rah-rah in their face yelling and screaming. I don't do that because that's not part of me. I'm not like that, you know? So you don't have to do things like that just because you think that's what coaches do. That's kind of the first part. And then the second thing, you've talked about this before too. You're talking about, you know, when kids come to the bench after the shift and all that kind of stuff. The kind of meta thing I'll pull out of that is you're coaching the kids on the bench. You're not coaching the kids on the ice.
That's right.
You know, and you've made this point before, and I think it's such an important thing that
I know where you're going. That
coaches and especially like parent coaches or people without experience, they don't know is they're on the bench with their foot on the boards, over the boards, yelling,
so true.
Yelling shit on the ice.
Yeah, pass.
Yeah, pass move it, back, skate. Back check, whatever. Yeah. It's like they aren't listening to you.
No.
They're on the ice playing the game.
They don't hear you.
They're on the ice playing the game. They're not listening to you. You know, so your job as the coach from the behind the bench perspective is to talk to the kids on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, that's who you're coaching. It's not the guys that are in the moment playing the game. You know, so I don't know if you want to rip on that.
Well, yeah. So that's a great point. There's a lot of times coaches just they feel like they're not coaching if they're not yelling something or screaming something or, you know, doing a commentary on the game, pass it, like move it, nice play. It's not coaching. That's anybody can do that. You're Howard Cosell now, right? You got a microphone, you're explaining what the game's, what's happening in the game.
Yeah.
What you want to do, if you need to say something, which you try to pick your spots, but like, let's say we're pucks in our end and it's coming out. Maybe you're saying to the boys, okay, boys, let's should be looking up the wall, looking up the boards. There's the open guy. You guys see that? Like, so maybe some guys hear it, some guys don't, right? He's got the puck. We got to be looking to move that, guys. You got to be moving the puck in that situation to create a 2-on-1 or whatever. But you'll see that turnover, boys, at the blue line. We got to make sure that gets over the blue line so that you can get it in the other end. Just that's the way you should be coaching. And then when kids come to the bench, you're explaining things to them if you can.
Mm-hmm.
If you know, like, and if you don't really know the game that well, that's why just the work ethic is another piece to coach around.
Yeah.
But so I guess in that situation, we're looking at, if you're going to give instruction, you probably have some idea how the game's played.
Well, I think you have some experience. But I think to that point, sorry to cut you off, is
it's okay.
You should, if you're coaching, you have to be prepared.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you can't coach to specific skills or specific in-game decisions because you're not that experienced, you can coach to your system or you can coach to whatever you do have prepared. You know, if you're at younger levels and we're just having fun and whatever, then it's different and you're just letting the kids play, then it's not that consequential. But as they get older, assuming you've made a plan as the coach and you're going into games and practices prepared with whatever the systems are that you're teaching and coaching, you should know the system.
Like, well, you should
understand what the system is designed to do and how it works so that you can coach to that. You know, if it's not a specific in-game decision, if you're not experienced enough to know exactly what the kid should do or what play should have been made, but you should be able to coach to the systems. So, because you should have them prepared and you should know
100%.
You should know why you're doing them.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you don't know why you're doing the system you're doing and you're just sitting behind the bench confused, it's like, well, maybe you shouldn't be coaching.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's 100%.
So that's what I would say on that.
Yeah.
Do you have any other points you want to touch on? I think we covered most of it. Anything else?
I guess the last thing it's important, actually, though, it doesn't matter what level you are, NHL or, and I believe this in the NHL too, all the way down to the lowest level. I think that put the players first. Like in the NHL, I know you're doing it for your job and it's all about the wins, but I truly believe that you're, and I could be wrong about this because I know some coaches that they don't give a rip about how you feel, just do this, this, and this. I think it lasts for a short period of time because it wears out. It's like, you don't give a rip, two rips about me. And I do my job, but like, I hope you get fired too.
Yeah.
But I think it's very, very important to put the players first and actually think through them. I was talking about this in my office with RC yesterday, but where's that line? And I said, it's really hard. I said, that's why I don't know if I could be an NHL coach, because it's actually just about the wins. That's how you keep your job. Yep. If you don't win, you don't have a job. So that's why you have guys that they have the reputation that they're assholes, because all they care about is, Eric, this is your job. And if you don't do it absolutely perfectly, then you're not playing and I don't care. Too bad. I need to work too. Right. But when you put the players first, like, what do the players, how can I help the players? I guess I'll put it that way. How can I help you? Like, John Tortorella has a reputation of being like a real, real hard ass. And Dalton would be the first one to say he's a hard ass coach, because the level has to be, you can't take a shift off. Take a shift off, his foot's up your ass.
Yep.
But he goes, I know 1,000% that he cares about me being the best that I can be. And knowing that little piece gets them always over the hump of when the foot's up the ass.
Yeah.
Right? So that's number one, especially. And then as younger players, if they know that you're coaching to help them, then they're going to do a lot more for you. That's the bottom line. And the thing is, in youth hockey, and I've seen this a lot, is when guys coach so that they can show everybody how great of a coach they are, because we won the Ontario whatever, or the state championship, and I've done that 3 years in a row, and they walk around like they're Joe Coach. It's like, okay, cool, but you're not helping the kids necessarily. You're putting yourself first, and kids see that, yeah. Right? And they might play for you. But at the end of the day, I would say make sure that you put the kids first. And then on top of that, I've said this before, is you have to take every kid and you have to spend time with them, whether that's on the ice working on a skill and or tweaking something in practice. But I think more importantly is that you take time, and it's not that hard. Before a game, before a practice, you're taking a couple minutes with not every kid, but going through the lineup, right? So I see this kid walking in and I go, hey, he's on my list today, or I see him. I'm like, hey, come here. How do you think you're playing? Yeah, I think you're doing great. I think you can work on this. I love your effort. This, that, the other thing. How's life?
Mm-hmm.
You talk to them so they know that you actually care about them.
Yeah.
And that'd be the one thing, is when you're in that, make a difference in their life. Let them know that you actually care. Because like I said before, at the end of the day, you're going out for a coffee when it's 20 years later and that kid is now an adult. Maybe he's successful. Maybe he's not. When he walks in and sees you having a coffee, is he going to turn his head and say, I hope you didn't see me? Or is he going to say, hey, coach, we'll go over to you and say hi and spend half an hour talking because he can't help himself?
Yeah.
Because you did something for him, right? That's what really coaching is all about.
Yeah. And that's any, that just the life parallel to you, is just that's like any work environment.
Yeah.
Anyone, for the parents, coaches listening, like when you go to work every day, is your boss a pain in the ass?
Right.
Or is he a guy you want to go shoot the shit with and talk to for a couple minutes?
Yeah.
Before you go do what you're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and that just makes a better environment. It just makes you, if your boss is good, it makes you want to do good work. You know, if they're a pain in the ass, it's like, yeah, like you said, yeah, I'll do my job, but I hope you get fired.
Yeah.
You know, and all that kind of stuff. So that's I think that's a good point to end on. You got anything else?
No, I'm good.
All good?
I'm good.
Okay, hope that was helpful. If any of you guys, or the guy that asked the question, or anybody else, if you have any other questions, follow up.